Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
51551 for the text. As a mother of a 25-year-old autistic son, I had a terrible experience with dental treatment. The services for people with special needs are appalling. My son spent months in severe pain while I tried to access the dental services he required for teeth extraction under general anaesthetic. Eventually, I had to take the private route and paid €3,000 to have two teeth extracted. My question is, what happens to the people who cannot afford to pay that? Indeed. And this just in a press conference in relation to the National Maternity Hospital, which the master of the hospital, Shane Higgins, was speaking. He said that he can understand why women who would have a mistrust in politicians, religious orders and health services. He reiterated his calls for the new maternity hospital at Elm Park to go ahead. And he also said that he would be open to removing or further defining the phrase clinical appropriate on legal documents. Of course, though, he correctly points out he is just one of the three stakeholders involved there, that there are others. There's the St. Vincent's Group and indeed the government as well, but that he, for his part, as master of the National Maternity Hospital, is willing to open up that clinically appropriate phrase that is causing so much aggravation for so many people. Let's move on. Sole, hake, mackerel, whiting, cod, haddock, just a tiny selection of the potential seafood swimming around in our sea. But while many of us rave about our spring lamb or our fabulous beef, how many of us are confident and happy to cook fish? I'm joined now by Chef Brian McDermott with recipes and tips on how to create the perfect seafood platter. Brian, hello, good morning, how are you?
Good morning. I am absolutely fantastic, and it's a Friday, which just reminds me of my childhood when I was force-fed fish every Friday, whether I wanted it or not, Philip.
Do you know something? I think that we have to, in fairness now, people are going to say, oh, you're being anti-church and anti-Catholic, but the Vatican has to stand up and take some level of responsibility for the attitude of Irish people towards fish as a penance and not something to enjoy.
I couldn't agree more with you. And I think that's the very point that I'm making because, you know, from a young child, my mom, God love her, you know, cooking for 14 of us, had a pot of milk. And this guy in a car pulled up on a Thursday evening and no refrigeration. I would have been sent out to the boot of the car for a white bag that was the old butcher style bag that was tied on the top and this vibrant red fish inside it. So we referred to it as Red Fish Fridays. And of course, it was absolutely beautiful. And the milk was thickened with corn flour and it was gloopy and it sat over the fish. But you know what? I was safe. I was in my home. There was heat and we were getting the dinner. So
we're very lucky in Donegal, though, but for those of us who grew up like me in landlocked counties in Kildare, I associated fish with, well, there was always a terrible hum off the fish counter, and there just shouldn't be. I think that might be one of the reasons that people are still hesitant.
Yeah, I believe so. And, you know, it's funny when you're talking to people about fish, you know, they'll rekindle a memory that I've just mentioned, which is my memory. But then they'll go on, they'll say, you know, look, I don't like the smell or I don't like the bones or I don't know how to cook fish. So they've given up before even trying. And I suppose that's what we're going to try and change and champion here today, because interestingly, the smell does linger after you've cooked. But I will go to the point of, you know, if you're sourcing fresh fish, if you're lucky enough to get it, and it is readily accessible, I believe. We are an island at the end of the day, and, you know, we're not a million miles away from the inland point to the actual coast. And some
and
of the
our supply chains and our distribution is much, much more sophisticated now. You're talking same day delivery from the moment it gets off a boat a lot of the time.
Totally. And that's the thing about it, because you're looking then for a kind of smell that just is the sea as if you're standing there. You know, there shouldn't be an off-putting smell to it. And they go into these sealer bags now with zips and everything on them. So don't worry about your beautiful car, the boot or your gorgeous oven at home. You know, food needs to be eaten and enjoyed. Okay. And fish is a good, nutritious one.
That smell, let's talk about bones for a second, because that does put an awful lot of people off. What are the species of fish in which bones are, you know, to all intents and purposes, non-existent?
Yeah, I think if we're going to transition people and their thoughts, particularly today, you know, things like hake. Hake has a belly bone. They're big, they're pronounced, and they're seen. They're not what's called little pin bones that you need to be sort of trying to fish your way out of there. So two things I would say, Philip, is firstly, wherever you're sourcing your fish, and if it is a fishmonger, have that conversation and get them to remove the bones for you. And the less work that you need to do with the fish, the more I think it's going to make it easier for you just to pan fry, cook, poach, or otherwise at home. So that's the first part of the conversation.
And the really nice thing there is that hake is sustainable, isn't it? There's quite a lot of it in Irish waters.
There is, yeah. And, you know, we talk about, you know, you only have to follow maybe some of the likes of the Board Bia campaigns, and you'll see what they're promoting at the minute is what's sustainable. And, you know, I talk to fishermen. I'm lucky I live here in Moville, which is near Greencastle. I went to college in Killybegs, Ireland's largest fishing port. So the conversation with fishermen is always taking place around what is sustainable now, and they're measuring that. So hake is certainly one of those. It's also beautiful. It's easy to cook, and it's very easy to digest. So if you're digesting, particularly for somebody elderly or for the young, even in just breadcrumbing a little bit of hake, it's a beautiful way just to introduce it to a family meal.
Very, very hard to go wrong with hake. You just have to make sure that you catch it, don't you, at the point where it's still moist and hasn't gone rubbery. And that's a fairly fine dividing line.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny, when you're making dinner at home and fish is involved, I always say to people, the last thing you cook is the fish, because if you're going to have the potatoes or your prepared salad or pasta, you know, do it and take it and have it ready, because fish only takes a little while to cook. Now, I'm going to refrain from saying how many minutes, because that will determine, you know, by the thickness of the piece of fish. Mm-hmm. So let's look at pan frying. If you're going to pan fry fish, OK, you've got two pieces of hake, say, and the skin on. Leave it on because it's going to protect the fish. Have a non-stick pan, have it dry, turn the heat on with no oil in there. As the pan warms up to a medium heat, put in your drizzle of whether you prefer an Irish rapeseed or an olive oil. Then skin side down onto the pan, and you'll hear this little bit of a light crispness going on. Leave it. Don't agitate it. Don't start scraping it with that fish slice that is somewhere in the third bottom drawer. Just leave it there, and you'll hear it starting to crisp up on the skin. Two things is happening there, Philip. Firstly, the skin is actually protecting the fish, that you're going to get that nice, succulent, natural flakes. But also, when you turn your fish is when you start to see a colour change coming up. Now, refrain from going down, bending your knees down and looking into the pan, because you don't want eye level with the pan. Stand back, take a look, and you'll see the colour change starting to naturally happen. That's a great indicator that the heat is coming up through the fish. And as it's almost a third to a half of the colour change in the fish, depending on the thickness, that's when you flip it over. And at that point, I actually prefer to turn the heat off. There's enough heat in your pan to cook the remainder of the fish. And a great way to stop the cooking of the fish is the lemon juice will cool down the pan. So I add a knob of butter and kind of just spoon that over the top of it, because you're looking for that little bit of what we refer to as caramelization, which is like a nut butter. And make no mistake about it, if me and you were sitting in France today, we'd be reading the menu saying, you know, local hake with beurre noisette. We'd be going, that is beautiful, which translates simply into what I've just done, which is like a almost burnt nutty butter in the pan. Squeeze a lemon juice, chop parsley, twist the pepper, that with a salad. Anyone can do that in terms of cooking, and it's deliciously fresh.
It's such a pity that there is no recipe in the world that's not always improved by butter of all ingredients. If I want to bread it for the chislers and make it, you know, maybe a little bit more visually appealing or palatable, what should I do?
Yeah, I think that's a good one to do, particularly where you've got kids at home as well, and get them involved, because you can shape the fish whatever way you want and cut it into fingers, and it's not going to be processed like you would bring out of your freezer then. So cut it into nice, good, big, thick chunks. On this occasion, I would take off the skin if it's the likes of a haddock, a pollock or a hake, being a white fish. And then once you have those cut, you're going to dip them into some flour, just plain flour. And then eggs that have just been beaten, really, and you can add, if you want, a little bit of pepper, not too much for the kids. And then finally into a breadcrumb, the same as you would do with a chicken goujon, really. And as you pat the breadcrumb, the secret here is that you use one person to do the flour, one to do the egg, one to do the breadcrumb, and then not everything will end up a big, mushy mess. Place those nice strips of the fish onto a tray, similar to what I said previously. just in your pan then, don't be tempted to go to the deep fat fryer, because all you're doing there is you're introducing about 70% fat and oil that you don't need. And you'll have a crispier breadcrumb, there's no doubt about that. But these equally will cook beautifully in a pan with a drizzle of oil, and you're just coating them to a crisp breadcrumb and sit them back on a tray and into the oven for a few minutes. And a nice dip, even if it's a ketchup, even if it's a mayonnaise, something just to get the kids eating a bit more fish instead of something that is overly processed.
You're very notably not talking about salmon here, Brian. I remember having a conversation with one of the better known restaurateurs in this country who said that he would have gone bankrupt even in his very, very posh restaurant if he didn't have beef or salmon on the menu of a Friday and Saturday night. We're just absolutely addicted to it. But yet, I see you're throwing out suggestions here like potted smoked haddock mornay.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, you look, deliberately avoiding the salmon, and there's so many, you know, different salmons that have to appear in certain menus. People will say they're using an organic wild Irish salmon. They're scarce, they're not available, so I tend to stay away from it when I'm trying to get particularly listeners to just grab a little bit of seafood this weekend. So for the dish that you've just mentioned, I love this one because it's nearly gone back to what I talked to you about at the start with my mum. It's that potted version, so it's really just taking that smoked fish. And what I will say about smoked fish is there's two different types. You'll walk in and you'll see the vibrant red one that I refer to as red fish. And then you'll also see a lightly tinged rusted effect on the edge of fish. That's a natural smoke where a dye hasn't been used. Both will taste the same. The only difference is the visual of the colour that's in there. So I prefer to go for the natural smoke. And then we just poach that in some milk. And as that's poaching in the milk, you're creating a stock because it's full of the sea flavour, this natural
but
saltiness.
But it's not just milk. It's about, you're making a roux. You're throwing in some butter and some flour there as well, are you?
Yeah, well, as the fish is cooking and poaching in there, I'm going to melt butter and add in some flour. So use a gluten-free flour if you are celiac. And that just takes a couple of minutes. Melted butter, flour, and then feed the milk after you've removed the fish that's cooked out of the milk. Just slowly feed that in, whisking it. It'll thicken up. And I have added in a little bit of a pinch of nutmeg in that. Doesn't need salt because it's naturally salty.
Yes.
The nutmeg gives a warming background to this. And your sauce will thicken up and you can season it with a little bit of cheese in addition. Back into a little pot or an earthenware dish, the broken pieces of cooked fish, the sauce and some breadcrumb and cheese under the grill. That with a bit of toast, or you will remember Melba toast from your days, Philip. You know, when you took a slice of toast and then you toasted it, split it in half and toasted the other side and it curls up. That just scooped onto the fish, or some homemade brown bread, is absolutely delicious and easy to do.
You're not a chef, you're an alchemist or a wizard. Brian McDermott, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. All those recipes are going to be up on the website. Up next, Callan's Kicks.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.